Hello.
Hey there.
It's My Bloody Horror Cast.
It's Steph and Carrie as usual, but we have our first guest of the season. Clon's back.
Yes. It's 2021. It's a perfect time. The world is opening up, and we are opening up as well to one of our friends and one of the people we know who I would consider a true movie aficionado.
Oh, for sure. I think Clon has more deep cuts than both of us together.
Agreed. And we are very privileged to have Clon Waldrop with us here tonight on My Bloody Horrorcast.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out in Carrie's yard.
I love it. I can hear the crickets. It's a beautiful night tonight.
It's likely you will also hear my dogs at some point. If a pin drops within about 2 miles from the house, we'll probably hear the dogs bark. So just so you know, here you are, you know, in the Davis Place compound.
Yeah. Well, Clon is our guest. Do you want to kick things off and tell us what you've been watching?
Oh, you know, I've been pretty busy lately. I watched mainly stuff for the episode tonight, but in between, I've started watching, I'm really not much of a TV person, but a friend of mine sort of asked me to watch The Wire, which I'd never seen. So I've been watching episodes of that here and there.
What a fantastic show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's pretty good.
What season are you on?
Oh, I don't know. 3, maybe? So I haven't really been binging it, but I've got this HBO Max. My brother, shout out to my brother, gave me his login. And, all right, his password is 69 69 420.
Yeah, all right, there we go.
Yeah, so
hey everybody, jot that down real quick. The world of film will be open to you when you put his password in.
Well, the HBO world of films, you can watch that Snyder cut, you can get on
the old Justice League.
Didn't watch it.
Nope, not the same.
Yeah,
I'm content with the old Dawn of the Dead. When it comes to Snyder, the remake of Dawn of the Dead. It's his best film.
I wonder how that holds up. I remember liking it at the time, and I've heard it doesn't hold up that well. But I wonder what would have. I wonder if just people are saying that because they're sick of zombies, or if there's something about it that isn't standing the test of time, or maybe they're just sick of Snyder. I don't know.
I think it's probably sick of Snyder, but I also think probably I'd still enjoy it.
I really enjoyed his remake, and as Steph, as you know, I'm not a huge fan of most remakes. Mm-hmm. I'm very critical of most. Obviously, The Thing is one of the great remakes of all time. Not critical of that at all. But I thought, as far as, you know, a classic, and I consider Dawn of the Dead, the Romero version, to be one of my favorite films of all time, not just horror films. I thought his version was pretty good.
I remember liking it.
Well, first order of business, after our vaccines hit peak effectiveness, hanging out inside on masks together, watching Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead remake.
All right, let's do it. I'm ready.
Think of something better, I can guarantee you.
There's nothing better, Clon.
So I recently watched the reboot of Wrong Turn.
Oh, I've seen that.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of fun. It adds an entirely new mythos as far as the Wrong Turn, quote-unquote, series goes, which is, what, 6 films deep? And I've only seen one of the original Wrong Turns, the first one.
Same.
And it was fun, if not necessarily super memorable, but enjoyable. And now it's kind of gained this whole franchise appeal thing. The new one I thought was kind of interesting. It switched up the plot from the original. It expanded on the universe of Wrong Turn.
And the Wrong Turn universe.
The Wrong Turn universe.
Wrong Turn. No, never mind. I'm thinking of Wolf Creek. Wolf Creek or Wrong Turn, and I got them mixed up in my head for some reason, even though they're different.
It's the crazy.
It's a backwoods.
Backwoods, yeah. People.
Yeah, that was
taking it to the city slickers. Yeah.
Carrie, we got to talk to Andrew Shearer because I believe he did a Wrong Turn episode on his podcast. I have never seen the Wrong Turn sequels. I'm ready to delve in.
I'm not entirely sure I have the patience because I've just previewed some of the reviews of the Wrong Turn series, and evidently they real quick go downhill. it doesn't take much
Someone
time.
Someone told me that about the Wishmaster franchise, and I was in it until the end.
Well, there,
man, you know,
there
I've
you go.
I've never seen any of the Wishmaster sequels, and I've always wanted to, and I never got around to it. Now, this might be...
Jesus. There's like a bird dying back here.
There,
is that a human?
This is what happens on Nottingham, you know? weird stuff. You never know.
Well, one movie I watched was 1981's Fear No Evil. Mm. It's something that James Greer recommended to me, and he said, Fear No Evil is the greatest fucking movie ever. And then he sent another text, and he's like, okay, maybe not the greatest ever, but let me know what you think. And I'm like, I thought it was really good. It's kind of like a hidden 80s gem about this shy high school misfit who realizes his feelings of alienation stem from being the Antichrist.
As often happens.
Yeah. He's also, like, clearly, in my eyes, clearly a gay teen. It's set in South Carolina.
Okay.
And our favorite bar...
A very subtle social commentary, all right.
Yeah, our favorite bar here in Athens, Flickr, is starting up movie screenings again next month, and someone's showing Fear No Evil outside on the side patio on 420.
I would bet it's James.
I asked him. He didn't reply. But I'm ready to watch it again. I'm watching it with my coworkers. Everyone's invited. You got another one, Colin?
You know what? I did watch this made-for-TV movie from late 70s, early 80s called Bad Ronald. Have y'all seen Bad Ronald?
Yes! I love Bad
it
Ronald!
It is on my list of TV horror films, TV movie horror films to watch I've not seen.
Yeah, it's a... Man, I don't want to say I didn't take seriously made-for-TV movies. It was a world that was not... I never sought them out because... No. You know, when you're...
ABC Movie of the Week, though, where Bad Ronald and that one with the gremlins in the house or whatever, like Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Answer the Phone or whatever. Not, what is it called?
I think it's Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Mr. Boogity?
Maybe something like that.
And it was remade with, like, Katie Holmes.
There's a good TV movie. Mr. Boogity. Mr. Boogity, too.
And Satan's School for Girls. The ABC Movies of the Week are awesome.
Well, I would have probably... I can imagine if I had looked at a VHS box for Bad Ronald or something, I would have passed on it if it said it was a movie of the week or something like that, because I thought, this isn't going to have violence and nudity to the level that I want it to have.
Sure,
and there is something special about that. It's kind of like the rhythms of a Columbo episode or something, where there's just like... There's nice breaks, you know what I mean, and it's got
you have the TV beats
pace, yeah. It's got
the TV beats on a TV movie,
exactly.
Sure.
Exactly, and which makes it really like it goes by really quick. Well, first off, it's short. If you don't know what Bad Ronald is about, it's about a teen that looks like one of the brothers from Slapshot. Shit, what are their names? The Hanson brothers from Slapshot. He looks like one of those guys.
Hanson the band? Mbop?
No. You haven't seen Slapshot? The hockey movie?
That was Paul Newman.
Yeah. No. Well, yeah, he's in it, but the Hanson brothers are the goons that... They've got these thick glasses.
Oh, yeah.
Just
okay.
go around
yep,
whipping
yep.
ass and stuff. Well, he's
I'm just
nerdy...
glad you weren't talking about Mbop, that's all.
No.
Okay,
yeah.
good.
No, but it says a lot that you brought that up. That you thought about Hanson.
I'm concerned that that's where you were going.
No shame, Carrie.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm a Hanson truther.
May I say a little more about you, sir? Yeah.
So anyway, now Bad Ronald was great. It was this nerd that he's got an overprotective mom, and he like accidentally kills a girl, and she hides him away in the house, and then she dies. And there's a lot of old ladies getting spooked in this movie, or at least two, which is good. Old lady horror is its own kind of horror.
Well, so many horror films also have the evil domineering mom.
She's not in it for long, though.
But they always force of the movie.
They're the force of the. They're the reason for the murder. Reason for the killing.
Right.
Friday the 13th. Yeah,
it definitely has that psycho, like Norman Bates sort of feel.
Sure.
But Bad Ronald lives in the house, and he's clearly gone insane. And
creeping on the daughters.
Yeah, he's creeping on the daughters that moved into the house.
What's the name of his fantasy land that he illustrates? And
oh, shit. Yeah, he illustrates this fantasy land. I don't remember what the name of the land was, but he crowns the girl, one of the daughters, is like the queen of or princess or something of the magical world that he's cooked up, and it's an imaginative movie, really, in a lot of ways, and it goes in places you don't think. And it's got Dabney Coleman.
I thought he was the dad, but I didn't want to say in case I was misremembering.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's easy to not think of, because when you think of, I think that the first thing that people think of when they think of Dabney Coleman is definitely 9 to 5, mm-hmm. but he's not funny in this, and he is always funny, so it's easy to misremember or think, not even notice that it's in. Anyway,
but there's no Dolly Parton in it, so that's a problem.
Well,
that's a problem.
Carrie, you gotta watch it to find out.
You would still love Bad Ronald, and then you should follow it up with Black Xmas. And tell me what you think then.
You know that I've seen...
That's a good call, yeah.
Which one? Black Xmas,
Black
you mean...
Xmas, it ties in. Klon gets it.
You didn't watch...
2006?
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch the 2006 one? I think
it's awful.
I love...
No, it's terrible.
I love it. I love it. It's like Bad Ronald.
It is.
But it's super weird, that little golden baby.
It shouldn't be called Black X. It should not be considered a sequel or reimagining or anything to Black Christmas. Because Black Christmas is one of the great... It is the grandfather of slasher films. Grandmother.
I hold nothing sacred.
Me neither.
So I don't consider it part of that film series, so it can be called anything.
I didn't hate the new one.
Black Christmas is its own movie, and any of the sequels, I disavow them all.
Fair enough, Carrie. I love them. What else have you been watching?
So, not horror, but if you are a fan, if you grew up in the 90s at all, if you ever rented a film in your life,
did you watch the
from
Blockbuster
a video store,
doc?
The last Blockbuster is a really fun documentary on Netflix. It's not great, but it's really fun, and again, it's all about nostalgia. It's all about the nostalgia of the video rental era. I would love to see another documentary about the mom and pop films, the mom and pop video stores of that era. But if all we have is the Blockbuster documentary, I'll take it. And it's basically about the rise and fall of Blockbuster as a video store. Even though we loved our local video stores such as Vision Video more, Blockbuster still holds a significance. When Blockbuster fell, video rentals were done.
I had an awesome Blockbuster near me growing up.
I loved Blockbuster. And so that documentary, I watched that this past week. And it brought back a lot of great memories of going to Blockbuster. You know, you go with your significant other and you pick out your movies, and each person would have their, you know, pick out their particular favorites. It's a lot of fun. And if you have any nostalgia for that era, for the era of renting movies, gotta watch it. It's a lot of fun.
It's on my list, actually. And I'm glad that you had such a positive response to it.
It actually, so it's about the final Blockbuster, which is still around. It's in Bend, Oregon. It's the last Blockbuster in the world. The Alaska Blockbusters went down a couple years ago.
Spoiler alert.
Right, yeah. If you don't know that, you don't even care, right? And 99% of the population, when they hear that, they'll be like, oh, shocker, I didn't know there was even one left. The last Blockbuster has all this Russell Crowe memorabilia that came from the Alaska Blockbusters that were the last ones prior to the Bend, Oregon one. Anyway, it goes into the sort of the family history of that one. It's great.
Cool.
Highly recommended.
Yeah, I've got to watch it. I obviously, as a, it's like a duty for because of this zine that I do. I started the zine late list because everybody that works at a video store has a story.
Oh, yeah.
Or even if you rent it.
I've got 3 years of stories.
Oh, dude. I have stories about you at those video stores.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's the first time we ever met. Was it those?
That's not true. We went to high school.
Well, we went to Lollapalooza, excuse me. But, yeah. You know, those were the times we connected, you know.
Yeah, but the zine attracts a lot of weird type. I didn't intend for it to be a nostalgia piece in a way, but it sort of inevitably became one. A lot of the people that engage with it, either by writing for it or buying it or whatever, enjoying it and talking about it, look at it through a nostalgia lens. What I really wanted was to just catalog all the fucking weird stories while the people were willing to tell them, you know what I mean? Because everybody's got crazy stories about crazy shit at places you work. And I had a lot, every type of guy, you could do a whole show on just restaurants, you know what I mean? Just
sure.
I'm sure there's got to be 20 shows of podcasts of just restaurant people coming on telling fucking crazy stories about getting shish kebabs stuck in their dick hole or whatever, you know, like.
But, okay, like, while I haven't heard those stories, I'm slightly curious.
Well, Waitlist is a great zine.
Well, thank you. But it does have the nostalgia. So there's people that come down on this. When I was young, we didn't really rent at Blockbuster that often just because it was a little further away. It wasn't like there was a... I didn't give two shits about what video store we went to.
Well, we had our local. We had Vision Video here in Athens.
Yeah.
Which you worked at for a number of years. And was kind of...
Well, we went to Kangaroo, too.
Yep.
We went to Kangaroo. Oh, was the closest one.
Oh, yeah.
And we went to whatever was in Beechwood, to be honest with you. And then when Kangaroo moved down to the other street, we went
the
to
the original 5 for 5, by the way.
Yeah.
The original 5 for 5.
Yeah, there was an Eckerd's out on the... where... Fuck, I don't know what's out there now. It used to be where Walmart was. There's an Eckerd's that used to rent a lot of cheap shit. Wherever you could get the most cheap horror movies is where I wanted to be going. Mm-hmm. And that usually wasn't Blockbuster. I didn't have anything against it. But once I started working at Video
Library... It was
the
family-friendly. And they even talk about that in the documentary.
Right.
Like, that was the family-friendly store. Yeah. Whereas the mom-and-pop shops, the indies, they had the good stuff.
Yeah. I have in-depth feelings about, like, the Blockbuster... What Blockbuster probably did to that generation of movies, where if you watch a lot of movies from that era, it seems like movies are not as wild, or rather they're predictable in what you're going to see in them from the Blockbuster era, because there's certain things that just straight up aren't going to get on their shelves. So if a movie has way too much gore or way too much nudity and sex, it's not going to be in a Blockbuster.
No.
So those kind of movies just were not being made in that era. Or if they were, they were really underground, or rare, or they would wind up getting cut to be on the shelves of a Blockbuster.
Sure.
And so you didn't get that, like, you weren't going to wind up with some crazy biker movies and shit. Like, they were pretty predictable, like, what was going to be.
You had to dig for the weird stuff.
Yeah.
The video nasties of the early 80s.
Right.
You had to really dig for those.
So,
Kangaroo Video had those.
Exactly.
We had all that stuff.
The big box stuff. Anyway, we're digressing now, but let's. I do want to see the last Blockbuster. I got to my point is I hated it when I was working at Video Library because we were just scraping in pennies. You know, we were just making nothing.
Sure.
We were dedicated to sleaze and pornography. And the actual shopping center we were in, I didn't realize it at the time, but it was such a bad neighborhood. Anyway, so people probably just literally didn't want to go in. There were just drunks hanging around. And
might as well have been in the middle of New York City in some, you know.
It was a very sleazy,
sketchy borough.
Yeah. Yeah, I got resentful of Blockbuster, but now I've gotten some distance on it, and I'm interested in watching that.
They represent a time period now. That wasn't my favorite place to rent videos. I wanted to rent mom and pop, but they represent that era.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I'm interested.
I've got one more that I watched really quick.
Okay.
I finally watched Sputnik. I really enjoyed it, but I got so fucking confused at the end of that movie. Do I think it's fair to call it Russian Alien? Yes.
Absolutely.
And I loved the character design. Jason thought it was stupid, and he couldn't get over it, and he kept laughing at it. But I thought the creature design ruled.
Was great. It was done on a very low budget, you could tell, but they put a lot of their budget in that creature design. I thought it was great.
It's weird looking, and it's really unique. But the ending, where they have a twist about this child they keep flashing back to, about the symbiotic relationship between the man and the alien. That stuff, I had to Google it because I couldn't totally understand.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought there was a lot of emotional heft there. And of course, I loved the idea of the Russian government feeding an alien people.
I thought there are always alien ripoffs. Every couple of years, we're going to have one. In fact, the Alien series rips itself off every couple of years anyway. Alien Covenant is basically a ripoff of the original Alien.
Mm-hmm.
A good one. But yeah, I thought Sputnik had some originality to it that I hadn't seen in a while.
Yeah, no, I totally see why you gave it a gazillion awards during our horror Oscars.
And the lead actress, Oksana, I thought she was fantastic.
She was great.
She was the emotional heart of that film, and she carried it, I thought, very well.
Completely agree. Mm-hmm. Klein, did you watch Sputnik?
No, I didn't watch it.
We don't get much Russian horror. You gotta see it.
That's true. I should watch it. I didn't know about it until the horror Oscar episode, to be honest with you. I'll give it a shot.
My Bloody Horror Cast, yeah, breaking movies for people.
Russian cinema is really like the blind spot for me. I haven't seen much of it.
There's not much of it here.
And also
it's okay.
that it's a mainstream Russian action horror movie.
As far as Russian films and the budgets they get, you could tell that a lot was put behind that.
Mm-hmm. All right, do we finally want to talk about Indonesian horror movies?
So the focus of our episode tonight is about Joko Anwar, who is an Indonesian filmmaker, primarily horror. That's his main focus. But not only is he an Indonesian horror filmmaker, his newest film was selected for the American Oscars. In Pettigore, his newest film, 2019, was selected for the last Oscars. That's huge.
What category?
No.
Just
it was
foreign language, the best foreign language film.
It didn't get nominated, though.
It was their entry.
Yeah.
But that's a big deal. The point is, the fact that Indonesia selected a horror film to be considered for the best foreign language category in the American Oscars is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Most of the time you're going to have when foreign language category, when countries submit their film for the foreign language category, tends to be heavy dramas across the board. Maybe action, primarily drama. But this is a horror film that's selected. It's a big deal for horror in Indonesia. And it shows just how important Joko Anwar is to the Indonesian film industry.
Well, there's a lot of Anwar available on streaming services, but I really slacked for this episode and I only watched two. I watched Satan's Slaves, which is a remake, and I watched Impetigore, which is what Carrie was just talking about.
Same.
So those are the only two I can really contribute anything to. I think Klon has seen a bunch.
Yeah. Well, I watched... Well, I can go through the laundry list of the ones that I watched. There are not that many of it. There are not, well, compared to other filmmakers, I think he has under 10 feature films total in his career. You know, I mean, I think he's done TV and shorts and stuff.
Correct.
But he's done, like, crime movies and comedies and things like that. Because Indonesia has this real bustling film industry for, you know, decades now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's never been a crossover director.
He was the catalyst for that, really, in their industry, to a certain extent.
Yeah, but they've been around. But, I mean, they've been making movies for decades. And
sure,
so,
sure. But internationally, beyond the borders of Indonesia, like, he's what's kind of pushed them into... Now other countries are aware of Indonesian cinema more than before.
Yeah, so this friend of mine asked if he... People do like to ask me, hey, do you want to do zine this, zine that, you know. The guy said, hey, do you want to do an Indonesian horror zine? And at the time I thought, well, I don't know what you would even... The only movies at that time when he asked me that, the only things I had seen were... I'd seen Queen of Black Magic. I'd seen...
An early 80s entry into Indonesian horror.
And I'd seen Mystics in Bali. And I'd seen the director of Mystics in Bali had... made Lady Terminator, which is debatable.
I can't believe that's the same director, because those movies are both bonkers in different ways.
Would you let me borrow, Steph, and I have still not watched it, but I promise I will watch that very soon.
You will be delighted when you watch Lady Terminator.
I can't wait.
And Queen of Black Magic. So one thing about Indonesian horror films, for this episode, I looked up, I was curious about the whole film industry and like why is it that there's never been a huge international hit Indonesian film? And because the ones that I mentioned are cult movie favorites. And I'd heard of Satan Slaves before that, the original. Yeah. But those were the only Indonesian films at all that I knew about. And those are just through weirdo cult channels. You know, those are just...
They were not mainstream in any way at that point. Yeah.
And
Internationally, I should say.
I think I knew that Barry Prima was I knew his name, but didn't really know who he was or what he did or anything like that. And I still haven't seen any Barry Prima movies.
I'm not familiar with this person.
Mm-hmm. He was like a action star.
Oh.
Seems cool. I'm going to watch one of his movies, hopefully. It was enlightening to learn about this film industry because it seemed like... There hasn't been a lot of... I like to do this occasionally. I'll look at a film industry and try to figure it out in a way. Like, I did research on Brazilian movies at one point, and it seems like those two, Indonesia and Brazil, have a similar sort of international level of... They both have this huge film industry that's very unique to their country. Like... It seems like Indonesian movies don't try to be successful outside of, like, the island of Java. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They do not care if you like them. And this is like, the first time that I guess that any of their movies have become hits, it seems like. It could be that they're popular in, you know, Japan or other Asian markets that I don't know about, but...
I think the Satan Slaves and Impetigore, the ones we're talking about, the Joker and Noir ones, are made for a wider audience, but I've still had a hard time selling them to friends to watch. Y'all are the only ones I know who have watched them.
I think Joko, I think he's influenced strongly by Western cinema, meaning not just, you know, U.S. cinema, but European cinema as well. You look at his command of... just visual command of his films. He's definitely influenced by American cinema, by European cinema, all that. That's why I think in Impetigore, Satan Slaves, those movies translate very well, in my opinion.
Yeah.
To our sensibility on this side of the world. Yeah. So I'm really excited that Indonesia that he has kind of taken that helm of, you know, one of probably the most popular filmmaker in that country and kind of ran with it.
Yeah, Satan Slaves is like straight up a ghost story.
It is. It is. Yeah. You think of The Conjuring. I mean, Satan Slaves really...
Yeah, I was going to say, that one's very indebted to The Conjuring.
Sure. Where, but at the same time, The Conjuring came out, 20-some years after the original Satan Slaves. So who's to say where that influence is?
How close are they, Klon? Satan Slaves, the 80s one, and Satan Slaves, Joko Anwar's movie.
I mean, decades apart. Cause
but is the plot the same?
Oh, well, yeah, I was going to get into that. I didn't see the original Satan Slaves. That's the one thing I tried that I was going to watch that I didn't get to watch. I tried to watch all the Joko Anwar stuff before I watched the original stuff.
I gotcha.
Apparently there's similar... Apparently this is a loose remake. And I'll say, I also watched the Queen of Black Magic that Joko Anwar wrote, but didn't direct, which I actually highly recommend, the Queen of Black Magic. It's great.
And I'm excited to watch that.
It is very different from the original one. In a way, it's interesting. So the original one is sort of a pretty straightforward revenge film in that this girl gets wronged very poorly. She gets done dirty, and she learns black magic and, you know, takes care of business, you know, with bees and snakes and kidnapping babies and all sorts of crazy stuff. It gets wild. She does all the craziest black magic. And as a matter of fact, that movie starred Susanna. She's like Cher. She's a one name, you know, star. And she was the horror movie icon over there, huge celebrity over there. One thing, there are a lot of Indonesian horror films on Netflix. There are no Joko Anwar movies on Netflix.
Mm-mm.
But there are a ton of 20 or something like that. There was a bunch on American Netflix.
Hmm.
So there's a movie called Susanna. Oh, I can't remember what it's called. But they have an homage to Susanna on Netflix that you can watch. She's dead, and so she's not in it, but they sort of made a horror movie in the style of one of the older 80s ones.
Hmm.
So I'm going to try and watch that, too. Yeah, you know, when I watch Satan Slaves, I got a real, J-horror vibe to it, too.
Can you give a quick synopsis of the movie for people listening?
Of Satan Slaves? Yeah, so it is a family horror movie. It does have that sort of, poltergeist feel where
mm-hmm.
there's a, what's going on? Why are we cursed? The mom, it's about a family that's just weird stuff keeps happening to them. The mom, the matriarch of the family is sick and dying, and she passes away, and then...
And we're going full spoilers here, so...
Oh, all right. Well, let's not, because I don't think anyone's seen these movies, because... I want people to watch them, and we're doing such a brief synopsis of all these.
Whatever.
We'll do minor spoilers in that, yes, the mom dies and ghosts show up, but there's all these...
Which you'll get that from the beginning, sure.
There are
two twists in this movie.
It's got some twists. I don't want to give the ending away. You know, it does... Basically, the mom is involved with Satanists, and there's some fertility ritual stuff that sort of... It becomes key to the story. And there's also, I'd like to add that the little kid that does sign language, the little deaf kid,
mm-hmm.
he's one of the cutest kids I've ever
he's
seen
awesome.
In
they
a movie.
They have names like Rini and Bondi, and then there's Ian and Tony.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, super, super cute kid. So people keep dying, and I'm trying to remember all the... Now I'm getting all the plot details mixed in with all these other fucking Joko Anwar movies where there's cursed family members. And
well, you know,
that's a theme of the movies is cursed families.
Definitely
a big part of all the movies. And also, in these movies, the kids might fucking die, you know?
He's Good not point. Afraid, yeah. They're not afraid for
He'll
the for the
baby.
Kid to die. Whereas in American films... You know, American horror films, that's the worst that could happen is the kid dies.
Yeah. I never
in
care
Asian
when the kid
films,
dies.
It just might happen. It's not necessarily the worst thing that's going to happen. The kid might die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to spoil some things.
You can go
things.
Ahead and spoil.
I cannot believe that joining the satanic cult and making a deal with the devil, I hope it was for part... The mother is a singer. She was a singer. She had some sort of career, and they're saying that her royalties have dried up, and she has this weird affliction.
Yeah.
So I hope part of her deal with the devil was that she got that singing career, because to just make a deal with Satan to have 4 kids, that sucks. Like, what was she thinking?
Yeah, they didn't get into the nitty gritty of the deal where, you know, who knows. It was interesting. I did particularly like that detail of the movie where you don't think about pop singers as being the ones that make the deal with the devil. You think it's either going to be a blues singer or a
yeah.
heavy metal guy, or you know, it's never a pop singer with a pretty voice. That's just not, you know. and they make that's an interesting detail of that, is that they listen to her music as though it were Slade Craven or some other horror movie heavy metal musician. There's parts of her record have satanic encoded messages, which was nice.
Yeah,
it was cool.
It was cool.
It
and
was
scares like really
his
got
movies
me.
Are just cool in general.
Yeah.
Let's just say that.
Yeah, for sure.
Anwar
really
has
slick,
such
really
a command of his visual style. He knows exactly what he wants to show you on screen. I love confident filmmakers like that, and Anwar's absolutely fits that bill.
Every jump scare got me, and there's so many cheap fake
out
jump
that
scares.
That was my comment. That's my if I'm gonna say something negative about that one, is that of the ones I've watched, I don't think Satan's Slaves is my least favorite, but I liked all the ones I watched. But I didn't like how many jump scares there were, because if you're sort of already in the rhythm of horror movies, you'll know when a jump scare is coming.
Not
sometimes
me. I'm
you
a
got
sucker
it every
time, Clyde.
Got you every time.
But the jump scares got me, and the gore got me. There's this scene where Rainey's would-be boyfriend is bringing
man,
a message
that shit
back.
Was awesome.
And I'm just going to say, he has a terrible automobile accident that I did not see coming, and I, like, gasped out loud.
Oh, yeah, me too. I jumped out of my seat and yelled at the screen. I was so excited about it. Yeah, that's, so Joko Anwar, it's real, you can get lulled into, this was sort of like David Cronenberg stuff, where you sort of forget that he might just show a brain or something. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I'll watch a David Cronenberg movie and the style will be so sort of measured and professional and slick, and then you're just like, oh fuck, they just ripped a dude's fingers off, right? Or whatever, you know, whatever fucked up thing they'll show in a David Cronenberg movie. Like, oh, that thing just slithered in his ear, you know, like, just similar in that way, where the films are very well made, and yet still, they might just show someone getting run over, a close-up of someone's head in an automobile accident, which is what you're there for.
But,
you know?
I mean, he had all the scares for me. The jump scares got me, the bursts of gore got me, and just the creepiness of, like, dead mom smiling face, that got me too.
The imagery was weird. I did really love Satan's Slaves. I didn't like it. I liked Empedocle more.
I think I like Satan's Slaves a little better. I was more frightened by it.
That's fair. I just felt like Empedocle was tense the whole time. I felt like I really didn't know where that one was going. I really was lost not lost, but...
Do we have anything else to say about Satan's Slaves before we get into Empedocle? Because I think we might all have more to say about that. Carrie, do you have anything?
So, it's significant to Indonesia in that it was the top grossing film of that year. I don't necessarily always think that the top grossing film means it's the best film. I do not equate that to, I don't think that's an equal thing. However, that's a big deal. Like, in 2017, a horror film was Indonesia's top grossing film. And it was Joko Anwar's film. So that says something about his significance again to Indonesian cinema.
Well, and it was a remake
Well, it was.
So they have
It was.
They have a tradition of horror, you know what I mean? And so,
they do.
Some countries straight up just don't.
But after 35 years, is that going to be relevant? You know, 35 years from the original, is that going to be a thing? And it was. One of my favorite moments, so I was doing some research on the film, they hired 24 extras for the scene near the end with all the children.
Oh, yeah.
But in the stills, there are 25.
Oh, spooky.
Creepy. One of them brought a friend.
Who knows? Who knows? Right. Maybe it got past the casting director. I don't know. But, you know, just I just love little moments like that. The other thing is, so Tara Basro was the lead actress in Satan's Slaves. She was the oldest child of that family. And she's become, I've noticed, she's been in multiple films of Anwar's, including Empedocle.
Yeah.
So,
is she more than those two?
She's been in some others as well, but particularly those two, the ones we've seen. But I've also known that Anwar tends to work with a lot of the same cast. I just love that. Again, that's the sign of an auteur, right?
Yeah.
An auteur of cinema, not just horror, is that he tends to find people he works with and continues to find new roles for them, bring them new challenges in whatever role they may be, whether cinematographer, actor, actress, that kind of thing. So I love
watched
that.
Satan's Slaves after watching Empedocle, and I was pleased to see her again.
Yeah, that's great. Cool, and again, as much as there's an influence for American cinema, again, we can look back and say it's not just American cinema, because we have an 82 version of Satan's Slaves. So maybe The Conjuring and films like that Satan's Slaves seems to emulate, maybe they had some influence as well from early, who knows?
Well, I'm
going
to watch
Indonesian cinema. We don't know.
The original before our next show.
So, you know.
Yeah.
It's something to consider that, you know.
There's another movie called Satan. Watch out. You got to watch out. Because there's another movie called Satan Slaves with Sally Kellerman in it. And it's not.
Amazing.
You've seen it?
No.
Well, check this out. I was at the flea market this weekend and I bought a copy of a, like, gore horror 10-pack, you know?
Right, right, right.
I got a DVD 10-pack. And, you know, it had, like, Mad Doctor of Blood Island and saw this crazy bullshit on it. And one of them, I bought it because it had Satan's Slaves. I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I'll just watch that. Even though I've got Shudder and it's on Shudder.
It
and
is.
I could have just fucking watched Shudder. I don't have to mess with the aux cable or anything.
Subtle plug. Yeah. It's on Shudder.
Yeah. Yes. And Pettigore and Satan's Slaves are both.
Both of them.
And Queen of Black Magic.
Yep.
And the original Queen of Black Magic and the original Satan's Slaves are all on Shudder.
Good job, Shudder. Representing international horror.
Yes. And there's a lot of other...
that's only scraping the surface, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about the influence of the American films because there's so many things I see in it that are from global cinema. I mean, he seems like such his own thing. But certainly The Conjuring is certainly an influence. But that seems... To me, The Conjuring seems like a directly influenced from J-horror films.
Sure. Like, no, I think that's true. We watch these films in a vacuum often. We watch American horror films in a vacuum. We think, oh, this is just based on American horror films of the past, when that's not always true. And that's why I think it's important to search out international horror, because you will start to see that, yeah, it's not just stateside. Films before that, decades before, in different countries, will influence these filmmakers. And the best filmmakers really are lovers of international cinema.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So.
All right. Are we ready to move on to Impetigore?
Impetigore.
Yeah. Now,
I loved this film, can I just say?
Yeah.
I loved Impetigore. And I think there are some flaws, too. There are a couple of moments that I think, plot-wise, I had some questions. But even that, I can look past. I thought it was an excellent film.
I didn't think there were any flaws to it.
I'll tell you where I thought the flaws were. Well, however, it's fantastic.
So I just want to say Satan's Slave's kind of a ghost story, and Impetigore, like a folk horror story, would you say?
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
So I would say this is distinctly Indonesian because it was so weird with the wayang puppetry.
The wayang puppetry is amazing. Wayang kulit. It's the Indonesian puppetry, their style of puppetry art.
Yeah, and this lush bamboo forest that this giant haunted
so
house
gorgeous.
Is in.
Yeah, I think that was a main... That, to be honest with you, I'm a sucker for a nice forest in a movie.
Sure.
And that was a huge part of why I liked this one. I like that one a little more. I do want to make a point that this is something that I didn't really know. I didn't know what the relationship of Satan would be in Indonesia. I didn't know if Satan was like a Christian thing, but I didn't really realize that Indonesia was a like mainly Muslim country.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I didn't.
Yeah, I was watching these movies where, because I, you know, you think Satan's Slaves, it's going to be a
the Christian version,
Christian-y,
of,
like,
sure,
you think about
Satan.
You know,
yeah.
Like, yeah, like
the
it's gonna,
God and the devil.
Yeah, yeah,
right,
like
right,
maybe
right.
This guy, but it doesn't have. It's not that. So
no,
why,
no,
I didn't want to make that final point, and to also tie that into Impetigore, in that it's because it's a folk film. This gets back to what I was saying about the Indonesian film industry doesn't seem interested. Even when I was reading descriptions of their like romantic comedies, they seem very specific to that culture. Where I remember reading about like a popular romantic film from the 80s that has an asthma tie-in, and that's apparently a big thing in Indonesia. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed like even just those small details would make it unique, and you know, a lot of which maybe those that sort of thing like makes it hard to sell to other countries or something. But again, like, they didn't need to sell to other countries because I think Java's the most populated highest populous island in the world or something.
Yep.
So
no, that's right,
like Jakarta is a huge city. Mm-hmm. So
Carrie, do you want to give a quick synopsis of Impetigore?
Yeah,
sure. So Impetigore, it's an excellent movie. It opens with this fantastic opening scene.
I got
that just
so scared,
grabs
like,
you
right off
from
the
get-go.
These two women are toll booth workers.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me of, you know, you can even look back to Scream. We can say what we want about, but it has this opening scene that just grabs you.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
If we want to tie it to films of, you know, to films of U.S. films, So you have this fantastic opening scene where these two friends, both are sort of kind of floating in the world. Neither of them are very, you know, you have your main character, Tara Bosro from Satan's Slaves, and Marissa Anta, who was actually, she's a journalist. She's an actress as well, but she does a lot of different interesting things. So you have these two friends, and they work at toll booths on, you know, on these interstates. And you have this fantastic opening scene where this weirdo who has been kind of coming around Tara Bosra, our true main character, and
Maya.
That's she's seen her. Yes. She's seen her before, or she's seen him before. And all of a sudden he drives by her and gives this really creepy stare. And then he parks his car behind the toll booth and starts to walk towards her. It's this wonderful scene where she doesn't really have time to escape the toll booth necessarily, and he's coming towards her. And the film is about her finding out that she's an orphan. So the film is about her finding out who her parents are, where she's potentially from, going and taking her best friend, Dina, Marissa Anta, to this remote town and trying to find out who she is, really, where she's from, and who her parents are. Because in the beginning of this film, and again, I'm getting, you know, I don't necessarily want to give all of it away, but in the beginning of this film, she finds out some clues about who she is from this bizarre character who wants to kill her. And again, one of my favorite opening scenes of a film I've seen in a while. It draws you in. And the rest of the film is really kind of a slow burn, slowly, you know, moving forward in you know, as it goes. But really, it's that first scene that draws you in. And the rest of the film is about them going to this town where her parents may or may be from. Maybe she's from there. She doesn't know. And they discover that there's some weird, weird things going on. And her lineage, her background is not what she thought it was.
I'm just going to go full spoilers again, because my comments are on these things.
Sure. I'm giving you the spoiler free. Yeah, you go for that. Yeah.
Well, okay, first of all, these two young, hot Indonesian women are very tough and very fearless. Because they go to this
City
remote
girls.
Village.
Yeah.
And they are completely unafraid to overpay to get driven somewhere they may not have a ride back from, to sleep in a very spooky abandoned mansion.
They're desperate. They're at this point where they've started a business that's not doing well, and they're kind of at the point where they're like, you know, we can go any direction. They're a lot like any of us were in our mid to late 20s, where we're like, we don't know what's going on. We've tried some things, they haven't quite worked, so hell, let's see what happens with this. Yeah.
And the thing that's going on in the village, they soon discover, is that every baby born here is born without skin. The village is cursed.
Yes.
And everyone's looking to this, I don't know what his role is. Is he a shaman? Is he a village
shaman.
Leader? Is he a puppeteer? Okay.
Shaman and puppeteer is what I gathered. But
and they're just like,
I think you can be both.
They're listening to this guy, and he's telling them basically that they need to find this lost child who left the village and skin her and put on a puppet show to like break this curse.
I know, what an idea.
It is crazy. And these puppets,
it just might work.
Yeah.
They look like such odd, like some of them are like shadow people puppets,
yeah,
but others look
puppets,
like weird
but
kites. There are some odd, there's some,
oh,
it's puppetry
I
like I haven't seen.
One of my favorite scenes of this entire film, playing on exactly what you're saying, Steph, is the, we talked about the Wayang Kulit, the Indonesian art of puppetry. One of the best scenes in the film. And it reminds me of that scene in The Wailing. In other words, it reminds me of watching films from other countries where we get to have sort of an experience in a different culture's traditions. In The Wailing, that wonderful 2016 Korean JNK horror film, we got to see the resurrection. You know, their attempt to resurrect spirits. In this film, it's puppetry, and it's this art of puppetry, but yet there's this cruel history behind the puppetry going on behind it. So you have this what, six or seven musicians sitting behind the puppet master.
Yeah, yeah.
So you not only get Indonesian traditional sounds and music, but you get this wonderful, you know, kind of puppetry art behind this silk screen. It's beautiful.
Yeah, this one worked for me in a lot of levels. There are a lot of things I like in movies that this had. It had a weird village, a weird mystery village. I really like puppets. I kind of like. I like it in
sorry,
things.
Sorry, sidebar. The last episode Claude was on was our Puppet Master episode. It was a Puppet Master.
Yes.
And you know what? I finished all those fucking Puppet Master movies, although I think they've made some more. But
they're always making more.
Yeah, they're always making always. More. I got to catch up with Charlie. But yes, good call. Well, see,
old
it's
CB.
True, though. I love a puppet show. I love it when a movie breaks the narrative to show you another little narrative, like a little puppet show, because usually it's like mirroring the horrors that are happening in the movie's story, or whenever you get a play in the middle of a movie, I usually like that too. It's just a nice little narrative. It's a nice little way to have an extra story in your story.
I love anything that shows the, you know, the specific culture. You know,
yeah, and this is really filled with that, because you get, you know, like if you think about a lot of folk horror as a genre, no matter what country it's from, there's usually an outsider going to a little village. You know what I mean? Maybe it's a witch hunter that's hunting some witches. Maybe it's a paranormal investigator or whatever. But there's always someone from the outside that's coming. They don't know what they're going to do. They don't know what's going to happen to them. And they're caught up in some mystery. But this one's really interesting. This one even seems to play with those ideas, in that the people, like you were saying, that they're really strong. They don't seem to be worried. Or they're scared. They don't want to get killed by murderous villagers. But, you know, they don't seem like they're incapable or out of their depths, or they seem to be able to roll with what they are dealt with.
Well, no, she had a machete maniac come at her, and she just picks herself up and has this other business, and she's like, well, I guess I better research my family.
Yeah.
I found this clue inside my leg.
Yeah. Right. They understand that the angels and the demons are just kind of there. Yeah. And they're kind of present, and you're going to try to kind of work around that and kind of figure your way around.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, there's a lot of tough female characters in his movies, and that was in the folklore episode too. That's another thing. He does seem to be a folklorist in some ways.
He's a folklorist and a feminist in multiple ways.
I didn't finish the folklore episode, but going back to Carrie saying that he likes to keep casting the same actors, Deanie, the friend, and Impetigore is in that folklore episode. I did not make it through, though. I've got to watch after this. Sorry, just another weird observation. I cannot tell the age of Indonesian people at all. When I was watching Satan's Slaves, it took me a while to figure out that the dad was supposed to be the dad, and that the Rini character was supposed to be his daughter. And then in this one, spoiler again, the shaman village leader guy is revealed to be a father.
Aryo Bayu.
And I'm just looking at him like, that guy, really? Because he doesn't look like a dad.
No. Well, I don't know. I could catch the dad vibes from him. But like... It does. You don't have to be that fucking old. I've got. By the way,
that's true. That's true.
I'm almost old enough to be a grandfather. Anyway, one of the reasons I think, at least in Satan's Slaves, that dynamic might have been weird for you is that the mom, when we see her, she's dying and seems so old. She seems like grandma age, you know what I mean? And it's
she's
withered and dying you know, diseased and stuff. So that, like, you might not have thought that she was a contemporary.
I can see that's what threw me off for sure, because
and he did seem like a young, like, she might have She's a pop musician. She might get the young guys. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
That could be a comment there on...
a little equality, you know.
I thought it looked like an Indonesian version of Mike from Happy Happy Birthday to Me Records. The same haircut.
It's got the same haircut, yeah. That's a good point. But yeah, I can see where you're coming from, though. Are we still... Wait, let's finish talking about Empedagore. What did you guys have anything
more to say about? So the only thing I was curious about, when Dini is captured, she had so many opportunities to be like, I'm not the person I lied to you about and said I was.
That is a ride or die friend.
She said... they come to her door and she says, oh, I'm my friend who is not here. And then she's in the jungle with these two dudes.
Well, at that point, she's already dead.
Yeah.
Well, but she didn't say it's not me. And then she's hanging upside down. She's like, still not me. Yes, it is ride or die. At the same time, I'm like, you might have saved yourself at a certain point.
But at that point, and if you she did, said something, and you didn't she's even feeding have, her friend to the villagers.
Right, but why did you even not say it in the beginning? In the beginning, you could not.
It seems like some shit you'd say to get out of getting killed. You know what I mean? Like,
No. That's what you would say to get killed.
I don't know what you would say to get killed.
She knows that's the person they're after.
She was dead as soon as they decided to take her through the woods. They weren't going to listen to
No, no, no. I'm saying when they go to the house, I'm like, she could have been like, she's not here, I'm not here, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I see where
She decided to take that on her own, I get it.
But here's what would have happened. If let's say you're writing this story, you've got a choice you can make where you add that. And then
It's a screenwriter's decision.
No, no,
it's
no.
not a plot decision, in my opinion.
But her saying that would not have affected anything. Because if you write that line in there, you've already got a machete mob. They're gonna kill her. You know what I mean? Like,
it was a decision to how to get her to the point of her
maybe
death.
So. Maybe
she
so.
She was not going to survive.
Yeah. That was... Right. Yeah.
It would have maybe taken a different path in one way or another. It would have been an extra two lines of dialogue.
Also,
all it would have been.
Do you get
that's
the
my only
that,
thing.
Like,
I'm like, she easily could have been like, no, I don't know where she is, and I'm not Rahu, and she is not either. You know, she could have chosen it.
Life
anyway.
Is cheap in the machete village. I mean, look at all the throats.
It's great for the
on.
Film. It's great for a that's film true. Writer. Yes. It's not great for the plot, but it's great for a screenwriter to further the plot of the film. I didn't think it was a great moment. You know, overall,
not Oscar worthy, is what you say.
No. I didn't love that. I didn't love that part. I'm like, you could have done something, anything. Anything other than what you said. However, I think the Empedagore overall is fantastic. Cinematically, when you look at shot for shot, I really sat with that movie. I went back and looked in different scenes. Cinematically, it's just brilliant.
Well, I'm looking for some clarification.
I even froze scenes. This is how weird I got in this film. I sat there and paused certain moments and looked at, like, the mise-en-scene, like, what are you doing in the scene? I was like, by the time I got to the end of the film, I was convinced. And this was the first Joko Anwar film I've ever watched. And
yeah,
Empedagore was the first
one.
Satan Slaves was the second. So what a great example of a filmmaker for this to be my first film I'm watching of his. It's fantastic.
I think... Perhaps I was not as worried about those. I had just come off a long stretch of watching Italian horror films, which often make sense. A feature of those films is that they don't make sense.
No, true.
They either don't care, they just straight up don't care if it makes
And I
sense.
Love Giallo and Italian
try
and all that.
To make not
but
make
no,
sense.
They just want you to go the next step of the mystery. It's like, whatever, you know.
So the Empedagore seemed like a fucking Hitchcock movie to me.
I thought it was really... I thought it seemed pretty sound. I was also confused watching it, but they completely explain everything. The only thing I'm not sure of is the nature of the curse. So, are women just very fertile in this village that someone's pregnant and about to give birth every night? Or is part of the curse that these...
I thought that too.
I think that's part of it, though. I think that's almost like a perfect recipe for torture.
God,
that you have an incredibly fertile village, but yet everyone's going to be born without skin. I think that's brilliant. I think that's great. Yeah, like every time someone has sex, boom, you're getting pregnant.
It's not that everyone just lined up 9 months earlier.
No, I think that's the part of the curse to me. Yeah, everyone's going to be fertile, and every time it's going to be messed up.
Okay, because I just thought it was like a nutty village that just kept trying to have babies, and I'm just like, why? Just give up. Stop trying to have these skinless kids.
Well, I mean, that's true. Here's one other thing. One other thing I wish in Impetigore I thought they could have. Remember the skinless kid?
Yeah. You think they should have had more skinless kids?
I'm just saying...
One's not enough.
I'm just saying, we got 1 second. I don't need visual of that, but I would have liked a little description on who that was, a little bit more. Just a little bit more.
I would have liked a bamboo woods, forest guys, of skinless kids.
I don't want to see the skinless kid, but I thought that was an interesting...
Shadowy, right. Moving around.
Yeah, like, I thought it was an interesting plot point they could have gone on. But, yeah, that's a minor complaint. I just thought that could have been an interesting subplot.
No one checked on him after the curse was lifted.
I know, that's what I'm saying. You see him for like 2 seconds, you're like, oh, guess he's gone, right? Poor skinless kid just sitting there. I'm like, you could have had some kind of interesting sort of subplot with that, but, you know, hey, I'm not worried about it.
Well, this definitely makes me want to watch.
Awesome.
It's awesome.
So awesome.
Now we're talking about all the little details in it, and I'm like, oh man, what a fucking movie, you know?
When right. Here's the thing. When I delve into those points, it means that I love the movie so much that I'm actually trying to dissect
it. Yeah.
And you know, that's a good thing. It's fantastic.
Well, is this a good point to wrap up?
I think so.
Cool.
I think anyone out there listening to our podcast tonight, if you have not watched Joko Anwar and you love horror and international cinema, you got to watch at least these two films. Start with these two. Start with Satan's Slaves. Start with Impetigore.
Well, that's all Carrie and I can say for sure. I'm ready for Queen of Black Magic.
But I think these are the most accessible. I really do.
Well,
like,
Queen of Black Magic is up there. It's if you like those two, Queen of...
Start with those and move to Queen of Black Magic and then move to whatever, but... These are also the ones that are the most easily accessible.
Yeah, well, Ritual is on Amazon Prime.
It is.
And
different film,
that
yes.
one has a, I want to say, almost like an Us vibe, where you're like, really don't know what the fuck is happening until a certain point of the movie. But it does, you started it, and it's definitely just a dude running around in the woods screaming at stuff for the first 3/4 of it, which I was there for that. Listen, I watched some shot on video bullshit where it is just people holding guts in the middle of woods. So my patience is pretty. It looked good. It was interesting looking. So it worked for me. But I would say that's not the one to start with, for sure. It is. I liked it, though. Particularly the end. It's got a satisfying ending. The Folklore episode was... I enjoyed it. Again, not as good as those other movies we've mentioned. But still, that's an HBO show that I guess only lasted 1 season, where every episode was from a different country. From what I'm to gather,
yeah.
It was HBO Asia was the imprint that...
Yeah, there was a Korean... Japanese, Indonesian, yeah, multiple others.
Yeah, I don't remember if there's a second, there might be a second season. His was the one that kicked it off, and it's a great, I guess it's sort of like Black Mirror, they're different.
It's like an anthology.
Anthologies, yes. There's no character, like episode 2 doesn't, you can watch them one by one and not worry about it.
A better version of the VHS.
Yes, so... Anyway, yeah, check out some Indonesian horror movies. They fucking kill it. Good.
If you love horror, there's no reason why you wouldn't love these movies we just talked about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a hot spot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Carrie and I aren't good about updating it, but we have an Instagram, My Bloody Horror Cast. Klon has an Instagram, Flea Marked.
Yeah, like Flea Market with a D instead of a T.
And you have an event coming up at Flickr.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to start doing movie trivia again on April the 27th.
We'll be there. Whatever day it is.
It's a Tuesday.
Steph, we'll be there,
right? We're trying it out on a Tuesday. It's going to be outside. The 26th or 27th,
It's the 27th.
And I'm starting strong. We're showing Tenebrae.
Yeah, Argento.
I haven't seen it. It's sort of slept on. If any Argento movies from his good, like, early days.
It's one of the best non-witches trilogy, you know, and all that. Yeah,
it's one that it might not be the first one people talk about, but it's
I've only seen it once, and I'm ready to watch it again.
Yeah, it's scary. Like, it's a nail biter, you know what I mean? But it's still got all the throat slashing and sleaze. It's sleazy.
But does it have the throat slashing that Impetigore had?
Well, you know what?
Impetigore was film was nothing but throat slashing.
Number one throat slashing movie. That's the number one throat slashing movie.
Every 20 minutes, throat slashing.
Yeah, great. but it has slashings, so it's Tenebrae.
It has slashings.
Yeah. You know that song.
Well, do we have anything else?
This week I sent Steph, I think a couple of days ago, I sent you some of, and I'll send you if you want to, some of the anticipated upcoming 2021 horror films. And it's kind of a mixed bag. In other words, there's a lot of indie upcoming filmmakers putting out horror movies in 2021. And then we've got all these franchises that are about to put out another installment, which could be terrible, which could be just awful. But we have a good mix of horror films coming out this year. Very few have been released at this point. But as we look towards the next 9 months, lots of good stuff.
Guys, I just have to share really quick, also not horror movie related, but I cannot believe the first movie theater that I went inside during the pandemic was, I went to the International Towing Museum in Chattanooga.
What?
The International Towing Museum. Did you know they're considered first responders and America's heroes?
Tow trucks?
Yes.
They were heroes.
And Jason and I were the only ones. This guy's like, all right, we've got to start a movie before you can go into the museum. And we went in the building, we put on our masks, we get in there, there's no one there. And throughout this entire huge display of tow trucks and their history, no one else. But that was my first movie theater experience. It was tow truck documentary.
Didn't you guys go to the Bigfoot Museum?
We also did that, but we didn't watch anything there.
Oh, you didn't go to the movie theater? They got a little thing. They've got a little screening area where you can watch this animated Bigfoot video.
Oh, man. I saw that they had Boggy Creek showing in one of the little closets, but we didn't watch it. We'd seen it.
A little closet full of Boggy Creek, yeah. It's a good time. They've got a list of Bigfoot movies there, too, by the way.
I should have taken note of that.
Highly updated. And even the erotic Bigfoot movies are on
the list.
It is a very detailed list of Bigfoot movies. Ethan took a picture.
Sexy Yeti.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to go to a movie theater for, a horror movie, like an actual movie theater.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to that.
Flickr's outside, but it's still going to count.
Yeah.
True.
I guess. I mean, no, it totally does, but I'm excited to pay money, sit in a theater.
On the big screen.
And just have my ears blown out with, surround sound.
That's right. Well, Klon, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for coming back, Klon.
Yeah, anytime.
We had a good time, and I'm really glad that I discovered Joko Anwar, and I think Steph, both you and I can credit Klon and thank him for convincing us to get on the Joko Anwar train.
Yeah, well, my friend Chris had told me to check these movies out, and I just slept on it. I kind of needed another person to be like, no, really, someone needs to watch these.
Yeah. I had started watching Satan's Slaves 2 years ago.
What?
Just out of the blue. and didn't really get onto it. And slaves. Just like, I was caught up with so many other things, both horror and our horror podcast.
I now think they're good titles. Came back to but it. At the time, they didn't stick with me, like at first. Now I think they're great. Anyway.
So again, thank you, Klon, for coming to our podcast and
of course
hanging out with us.
Anytime.
All right. Bye.
Bye.